Welcome to Indie Audio, the audio version of The Independent. To listen to past episodes of Indie Audio and of the podcast Indestructible, go to independent.org. That's independent.org. If you like what you hear, please help support The Independent by going to our webpage and donating or becoming a subscriber.
My name is Erin Sheridan, and I'm the author of the story 6 months on, Many of Hurricane Maria's Refugees Still Have No Place to Go, as published in the May issue of The Independent. On the evening of April 18th, the sun is just beginning to set over the Penn South complex in Chelsea as Andrea Tejada, Brenda Suarez, and Sofia Miranda walk into the colorful 17th floor apartment of Lizette Colon, a counselor and union chapter chair at the Hostos Community College in the Bronx. The three women, who have been living without permanent housing since they left Puerto Rico after Hurricanes Maria and Irma devastated the island last September, are preparing to speak outside City Hall the next day. The event was organized to protest the impending eviction of 83 Puerto Rican families on April 20th after the Federal Emergency Management Agency declined to renew housing assistance it distributed through its Temporary Shelter Assistance Program. "I do not have a roof over my head, not even here, not even in Puerto Rico," Tejada remarks in Spanish. Their mood is brighter than would be expected. Earlier that afternoon, it had been rumored that the city would temporarily foot the bill for housing, preventing families from becoming homeless until the next TSA renewal deadline in May. But the three women, and many of the 2,600 Puerto Rican hurricane refugees here, still lack permanent housing and adequate help to navigate the welfare system, deal with language barriers, and get psychological support. "They call it the limbo," says Colon. On April 5th, 4 months after their arrival in the city, Tejada and her four-year-old daughter, Hottie Liz, were evicted from their hotel room and placed in the Bronx's PATH shelter, only to be later removed on the grounds that Tejada had to exhaust support from all other programs before she could enter the city shelter system. "Already twice, they've told me to pack my bags because they would throw me out," Tejada says, through Ana Lopez, a professor of Latin American and Caribbean studies at Hostos who helped with the translation that evening. "And my daughter says, 'Mama, do I have to help you pack again? Are they going to kick us out?' And then she says, 'Imagine me. Every time I put the card, is it going to turn green? Is it going to stay red?' The electronic key cards they use to get into the hotel room turn green to let them in and red if access is barred. They've had to navigate the whole welfare and public agency system here, and they've been thrown from one agency to the other. It's like ping pong," Lopez, translating for Miranda, says. "And it is really exhausting. I spoke to someone from legal services that is servicing families in the Bronx," she adds, "and she said that the hotels get $8,000 a month for housing them. With $8,000 a month, these families can have permanent housing for less." Currently, in New York State, there are 157 families checked into hotels under FEMA's TSA program. Each family receives some money through public assistance and SNAP benefits. Sitting at Colon's kitchen table, Miranda says that she receives $145 every 2 weeks for herself and her son. Suarez, who left two daughters behind in Puerto Rico in order to seek medical care for her 80-year-old grandmother, who suffers from dementia, says she gets $178 biweekly. According to FEMA spokesperson Daniel Yarquez, any rental assistance families may be eligible for through FEMA's Individual Assistance Program is based on the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development assessment of market values in Puerto Rico, which likely would not cover the cost of rent in New York City. "The women have struggled to find a way to produce a stable income. Miranda is working as a home attendant, but had to cut her hours because when she was working extra, she didn't qualify for the rest of the services," Colon says, translating what Miranda told her. "It's a catch-22. If you work, then you don't have the services, so she has opted out because she has a son in school. And Andrea, she has a daughter," she adds. "The daughter is in school, and she's trying to get a job. But then between all the things that you have to do with so many appointments, there's no way that you can keep a job. She has a bachelor's degree in criminal justice. Living in hotel rooms also causes other problems. They cannot cook because they don't have a kitchen," Colon says, "so it's a catch-22 because the money doesn't last. The regularly threatened housing aid cutoffs hit women and children the hardest and show the government's disrespect for Puerto Ricans," argues Lopez. "In other states, and even in New York, hurricane disaster evacuees did not have a term limit in housing aid," she says. "They were put in a hotel until housed in permanent housing. No one was ever kicked out, so it appears Puerto Rico is not treated with the same respect and dignity." State Senator Gustavo Rivera of the Bronx calls FEMA's decision to end TSA aid the latest example of their inadequate and unacceptable response to the crisis. Tejada struggled to find food in the months following the storm. Her apartment in San Juan was flooded and condemned for being unfit for human habitation, and power outages were frequent. The final straw was when her daughter saw three muggers kill an older man. "The little one saw it from the balcony," she says, translated by Lopez. "They were on the balcony getting air, it was dark, and there was no electricity. She actually saw the man get killed in front of her, and she remembers." The refugees got a temporary reprieve on April 20th when FEMA, responding to a request from Puerto Rico Governor Ricardo Rosello, announced it would extend TSA funding to Puerto Rican families for another month. Peter Gudetis, executive director of New York Interfaith Disaster Services, argues that while it is legally the federal government's responsibility to assist evacuees, the city's response has also been inadequate. In February, it quietly closed the emergency service center at the Julia de Burgos Performance and Arts Center in East Harlem, which had been set up to help evacuees from Puerto Rico and other hurricane-devastated areas last September. People that chose to come to New York and are here in New York are New York City's problem, whether they get federal funding or not, Gudetis says, because the alternative is just that they end up on the street or in the shelter system, or they have mentally ill children, or they're getting dumped on hospitals if they have medical problems and they can't pay their bills. While organizations like NIDAS can help families move into apartments with rental deposits, furniture, and transportation, applicants have to prove that they can afford to pay the rent before they can access those services, Gudetis notes, and Puerto Rico has yet to be rebuilt, with another storm season coming in a few months. The governor of Puerto Rico says they want people to return to the island. Return to what exactly? A damaged home with no power, no access to water? A hospital that's 2 or 3 hours away that's barely functioning on generators still? He says it's like sending people back to a war zone. Miranda says she's not going back. She said that in 2 months, she was able to complete a home attendant course. She got certified, and it is with a lot of pleasure that she will be taking care of the elderly, Lopez translates. Here she says there is an assurance of electricity, water. She's going to continue to study, and her son is going to school, and that's a sure thing. In Puerto Rico, the schools are closed. She feels that she can reach certain goals here.
So, Aaron, tell us a little bit about the mood in the room while talking to these women.
There was a lot of laughter. There was a lot of humor. I think that's how they're dealing with their situation. They left behind families, lives, normal lives, cars, houses. And it's really, I mean, can you imagine being stuck in a situation where you have no way to really move on?
That was The Indie Audio, the audio version of The Independent, produced by Elia Grant.